Welcome to Take the Lead. The content you're about to hear is from one of our Boca Lead events. Boca Lead is a monthly business luncheon hosted at Boca Raton Community Church and taught by Pastor Bill Mitchell. Our desire is that the information you're about to hear will increase your leadership and also raise the bar of ethics and integrity within the business community. So take the handout, grab a pen, get ready to take some notes, and enjoy the video.
Good afternoon and welcome to Boca Lead. And I met many of you who are here for the first time, so let me just ask, who is here for the first time? Raise your hand. Well, welcome. We're glad you're here. Thank you for being here. What Boca Lead is a group of business people that get together each month, and our goal is to raise the concept of character and ethics in business. We believe business people should be taking the lead in these areas, whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit, in the education area and in small businesses as well as large businesses. And so we do that. We get together and connect. It's a great opportunity to meet a lot of people, and we're so glad you're here, and many guests from Del Rey and other places are with us, and we're so glad you are here. We take a topic a week, and we just try to talk about it, about influence and things. And today's topic is the topic that you're going to say, why did I come here to hear about it? And it's the topic of habits. Habits. You see there, you have a little handout. It says habits right on it. You said, I didn't need to pay for lunch to get to learn about habits. But we're going to have some fun with this. And let me just start out. There's a great book about habits that is on the New York Times bestseller in the business section called Atomic Habits by James Clear. If you want to look deeper in some of these areas, it's a great book to do it, but like most books, you can dissolve them down into about three or four pages. The publisher says 350 pages, but it's about three or four pages. You'll get the three or four page version today, so you don't have to buy the book. So let me ask you, before we start, does anybody know what these are? Can you see them? Do you see them? What are they? Someone said it louder. They're bicycle spokes, okay? Bicycle spokes. In middle school, we all learned how to ride a bike, or in elementary school, and most of us in middle school stopped riding bikes, but there are a few of us who kept riding bikes, and they're on A1A, and you hate them, right? And I'm one of them. I don't go as fast as I used to go, but I still go as long, and we still have a great time. And I don't have the big expensive bikes that some of those have. And if you're not familiar, those of you who bought your last bike in middle school and your parents spent $199 for that bike, those bikes that those people are riding are $10,000 bikes. You need to know that. My neighbor, who's a biker, has a $14,000 bike. I'm like, don't you have a life? $14,000 bike. And mine's nothing like that because I'm so big, the more expensive bikes don't help me at all. And so I do not have that. But anybody will tell you this, the most important part of a bicycle are the spokes. Without a doubt, the most important part of a bike are the spokes. Now, you know how much these spokes cost? These are stainless steel. Now they're titanium, and I didn't want to bring all those. They cost about $1 a piece. 16 of them to 22 web a wheel of a bicycle, that's $16 to $22 is the most important part of the $10,000 bike. It's unbelievable. I go, you know, I have the same wheel you have, but you have all these other things. This is the most important part. Why? When you're biking and one of these gets loose, $1 worth of your $10,000 gets loose, your bike goes 20 to 25% slower with the same effort by you. One, not braking, just loosening a little. If two get loose, two, that's $2 out of your $10,000 or $14,000 bike, the bike is immobile. It goes thud, 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 and you stop riding your bike until you get those two $1 spokes fixed. Is that incredible? You can have the best set of wheels. You can have the best derailleurs. I mean, some of these derailleurs are thousands of dollars. I don't get it. But if you don't have your $1 spokes trued, that's what it's called, not aligned, but trued properly, your bike is immobile. I look at habits as the spokes of your life. You look at your life, you go, I've got this and I've got that. And I go, you do, and you look great. But if you don't have good habits, you can be immobilized. Don't we know this? We see people with some bad habits, maybe one bad habit, and it can derail somebody's entire life. Two bad habits, and they're totally off. So today we're going to look at how do you develop habits and good habits. Now, let me give you a quote here. Put the quote up. This is in the book. It's a great quote. Habits are the compound interest of self-improvement. You want to improve yourself, habits are going to make it you do that faster than anything else. It's not how much money you put in your company. It's not how much money. It's the habits you have or the lack of habits that you have. Now, I have a little concentric circle, three concentric circles there, and I want to look at that and give you kind of the idea of what I'm talking about. The outer concentric circle, and you can write these down, is outcomes. You could put the word goals. You could put whatever word you like to use in your business or in your home. I'm just using the word outcomes. That's the outer ring. The middle ring is the habits, or are the habits. They're the things that bring it together. And the close inner ring is identity. That is you. And the question becomes, what is more important in your life, your identity or the outcomes in your life? And you go, what do you mean, Bill? Let me give you an example. Elizabeth and I have five children, one of whom is a lawyer, and he's here, and is involved in business. It took us a long time to get our children out of the house. 34 years it has taken to get our children out of the house. And people go, and I say that laughingly, we love our children. People go, how are you doing? You're an empty nester, right? You're an empty nester. That happened in September when our 18-year-old, our fifth child, went away to college. Well, here's the point. We love it. It is the most incredible thing to be an empty nester. Why? For us, our identity as a couple is not our children. The outcome of us as a couple is our children. And what happens is, and when I got into being a pastor, I married people. And so I was a business 25 years, and I had married a few over the years because I was an elder of the church, and you can do that. But then I started marrying people. And then you start dealing with people who are getting divorces and marriages, and you find out that marriages go bad in year 7, years 18 to 22, and years 35 to 40. Those are the critical years that marriages go. And I wonder, how come somebody 40 years married gets a divorce? 7 years, they get a divorce because their outcome-based marriage now has their children in school, and they have nothing together. The 18 to 22-year divorce is because they stayed together to get the kids in college or out of the house or self-sufficient. Their marriage was based on their outcome, and they did the outcome. Marriage is gone. 35 to 45 when they years of marriage, not years old, but years of marriage, 45 years and they're getting a divorce. Why? Because they're starting to retire and they realize that work was the center of their marriage and their identity was their outcome. And when their work went away, their identity went away. So the question is, are you living your life based on your outcomes or based on your identity? And it's important to know that because are your habits flowing outward in or inward out? And I would venture to say it's more important to identify your identity and then develop your habits so that you get the outcomes you want. As opposed to saying, I want to get the outcomes I want, I'll develop the habits, and I hope I become the person I want because of those outcomes. Because come the first recession, and your job, you lose your job, and your job is your identity, you've lost it. Your habit, you have great habits of, so just understand that identity is huge. You are not your job. I love my job to death. I love what I do, but I am not my job. And I can say, I love my kids, but I am not my kids. I love them to death. They're our favorite friends. We love being with them than anything else, but my identity is not based in my kids. My outcomes are based in them, many of them, but not my identity. So you look at work at the same thing. I'd like to give you four thoughts in this area, very simple thoughts on how to create a good habit. And again, I hope you're creating them from inside out, not outside in, but that's you. You've got to figure this out. Can I give you the first one? Number one, make it obvious. Now we're talking about habits. Make the habit obvious. Name the issue at hand. Everybody else knows the obvious about you. So I'll just say me. I need a habit to lose a little weight. Name it. You know, not just, okay, I want to get up a little earlier. Name it. I want to get up a little earlier so I spend an hour before the day starts so I can do that blog I've always wanted to write. I want to spend some time alone with God. I want to exercise. I want private time because the rest of the day I'm running on fire. Well, that's a habit. Name it. Do it. It's so incredible. Here's interesting. And you go, it's obvious. I'll give you one. Has anybody ever been to London in the tube, the underground tube? Raise your hand. I don't know what you think about it, but it's incredible. There are five train systems underground that were started in the 1880s. It is the most unbelievable thing. Yeah, it smells a little, and yeah, you see some critters here and there, but it is unbelievable. The problem with the system is those five rails, the Piccadilly Rail, the District Rail, the Victoria Rail, the Bakerloo Rail, they don't connect because they were all done at different heights or depths, I should say, and at different times, and all their platforms are different, and all their railways are different. I mean, the actual trains are different. And so in the 1960s, they said, we got to bring it all together so they can interconnect and we get everybody to everybody else's place. And they realized it was in the 60s, it was going to be billions of dollars to do that. Well, I mean, how much would it be now? It'd be $1 trillion or some ridiculous amount. One guy said, I can solve the whole thing. I can solve the whole problem of your system. You know, some of the trains would come in and the gap would be here and some would be this and some. And he said, just use three words and I'll solve the problem. Do you know what the three words are? Louder. Mind the gap. Have you ever heard that? Now, we Americans don't know what the word mind is. If you're from the British Commonwealth or England, like my wife is, mind means look out, understand. Mind. Mind the gap. What it is telling you, the habit that every Brit has, and all of us non-Brits have because it's posted everywhere, and that little lady computerized is saying, mind the gap, is that when you walk on a train or off a train in the underground, you look down. Because everyone is different. You can't ride that every single day and even know what it is. You have to mind the gap whether you go there every single day or like us, once every other year. I have to mind the gap. You have to mind the gap. It's a habit. The habit is when you walk off a train or on a train in England, look down. And they save billions and billions of dollars because you can easily walk up 2 inches, down 2 inches, out 3 inches, in 3 inches. And a simple habit of every Brit knows when they walk on a train in England, in the underground, you look down before you enter or exit the train. It's a habit that they have brought into. So some habits are not hard to do. They're obvious. Grab hold of the habits you need to do and make them obvious. Number two, make it attractive. And by attractive, I don't mean pretty, beautiful, attractive. What I mean, you want to do it. It attracts you to do it. Here's a sentence you need to know. Join a culture where your desired behavior is the normal. Just join the people that you want to be like and join them. In business, you want to be a better architect? Join a firm that has Well, you have a good firm, join a trade association. You have a good trade association, join a group, a small tech group, and get it. Join people that will help you and that you go, boy, they're doing it. I want to do what they're doing. Go join them. It's kind of one of those very simple things is make it, so just go and do it. I remember years ago when I was younger, I wanted to up my game in a bunch of areas. And so I met six guys around the country and we actually flew and we had a little tech team, that's what they're called. And twice a year we'd get together. They were like my personal board of directors. They were a little ahead of me and go, I want to be like you. Can I spend a weekend every 6 months with you? Go join what they're doing. And when you do that, it's unbelievable the results that will happen because write these three words down. You are influenced by three groups of people. Can I tell you who they are? No matter what, good, bad, indifferent. First one is the close. People who are close to you, it's not on the screen, the close, you are influenced. Back to my son, Greg. Sorry, Greg, that I'm saying this, but if you got on the phone today and you called Greg and just listened to him, not FaceTime, not see him, you talk because he looks more like his mother than me, but his voice is identical to mine. He grew up close to me, and for better or for worse, he has my identical voice. Inflection. Some of his family members can't tell if it's me on the phone or him on the phone. Why? We are that close, and we're that, you are affected by the close. The Jamaicans have a saying, fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. Now that's a relational thing, but I tell you what, if you're with a firm, you're going to become like that firm. So you better hope you want to do what that firm does. Because if you don't, you're going to become like them anyway, because they're close. The second group that affects you is the many, M-A-N-Y. You are affected by peers, by the larger group. No matter what you say, you are affected by that group, so you better start associating with groups that you want to be like. I look here, I look at the head of Rotary. They're doing some incredible things. I know there's like eight Rotary clubs in Boca, and some are doing scholarships for medical, and some are doing scholarships for this, and some are doing first-time going to college scholarships. And I go, I want to be like them. Join Rotary, because the many are doing such a great thing. Go join them. That's why we have churches and associations. You want to be like, come join this and be a part of it. The many. The last one, the third one you are affected by is the powerful. There are heroes in your industries, good and bad. There are heroes in your life, good and bad. You better find the good ones because everybody says we are influenced by our heroes. So we're influenced by the close, the many, and the powerful. Now let me give an example. How many of you have quit smoking? Smoked and quit smoking. Raise your hand. I'm very proud of you. Let's raise your hand. This is really cool. So thank you. Now, if I were to come to you, those maybe 50 or 100 that raised your hand, and I would say, can I offer you a cigarette? What would you say? There's one of two things you would say. Well, there's three. You could say yes, but hopefully you wouldn't. There's one of two things you would say. No, I'm trying to quit smoking. That's one. No, I'm not a smoker. Do you see the difference? Outcome-based habits would say, no, I'm trying to quit smoking. That is an outcome I'm trying to do in my life. I've been a smoker for 20 years. I'm trying to quit smoking. Can I tell you that's the wrong answer? No, I am not a smoker. You see, that's identity-based. It's identity-based. Just that simple change in your mind says, I'm not a smoker. Now, you may have been a smoker for 20 years and not a smoker for 1 week, but you are not a smoker. And may I say this, and I know some of my psychology friends and family therapist friends might disagree with me, but can I say this as an encouragement? You are not defined by your past. You got to realize, yes, your past has had a large effect on you, and you can carry it with you the rest of your life, but please do not let your past in a negative way define you. There is a future for you that is good, and don't let the past, the negative part of the past, take the good part of the past and build on it, and take the negative part of the past and throw it out because you are not trying to stop smoking. And I'm just using that as one example. I'm trying to lose weight. No. I'm eating properly, or whatever it is. I'm trying to be a good and name your industry. No, I work for a firm that's great at this, and I'm just young at it, and I'm going to do it. You know, it's just a perspective change. Make it attractive. Number three, this is important. I'm going to give you a couple tools on this one. Make it easy. We all look at habits and go, this is the toughest thing in the world to do. Habits. I hate habits. Can I give you three ways to make it easy? And they're right up here, and they're in your notes. Use the two-minute rule. The two-minute rule says this. If I can do it for 2 minutes, I can do it for an hour. You need to make some sales calls, and you're not making those sales calls. Do it for 2 minutes, and you'll start making those sales calls. You need to get out and run because you're trying to get exercise. You will never run if you don't get running for 2 minutes. The two-minute rule, and everybody will tell you this, all these gurus will tell you, if you can do it for 2 minutes, you can do it for longer. If you can do it for an hour, you can do it for a day. And if you can do it for a day, you can do it beyond. So back to biking. My biking, because I'm 60, has slowed, right? So I'm denying my age. And so I set a goal. I said, I'm a biker, and bikers bike. And so I got a friend, the guy who gave us the ice cream last week. He's not here. He travels all over the world. He goes, hey, I'll help you bike. And so I said, he said, what's a critical point of biking? I said, 100 miles a day. So I said, we're doing 100 miles. So last Friday, 2 weeks ago yesterday, I did 100 miles. So because I'm not trying to bike, I'm a biker. And bikers ride 100 miles a day if they really want to bike. It's amazing. And you know what? I got off the bike, took a shower, ate, and we went on the rest of the day. I didn't go lie in bed all day and moan and groan. I didn't even tell anybody until yesterday that I had done it because I wasn't sure if I could do it, actually. So I stop in front of Mar-a-Lago because I passed it 4 times, and the police come after me. I'm in a bike suit, and the police are saying, what are you doing here? I'm just taking a photo to prove I've passed it 4 times. Anyway, make it easy. Do it for 2 minutes. Number two, begin time blocking. My friend John Lucas back there teaches time blocking. What that means is you say, I want to begin a habit of blogging. I want to be a thought leader in my business. I want to blog every week, but I don't have time. You know, quote, I don't have time. What should you do? Time block. How long does it take you to write that blog? Well, maybe the first couple of weeks is going to take you 3 hours or 4 hours, then you'll get it to a whatever. Time block that time and go, I'm going to do it. I need to make sales calls, but I have no time for sales calls. We've got all these old customers that we've lost. I have no time to go after them. You know what? You'll never go after them unless you time block. Time block means you set an appointment for an extended period of time, and you just do what that habit requires you to do at that point in time. Instead of moaning all day long, you know, I got to call my customers. On Thursday afternoon between 1 and 3, I'm going to call all the old customers of the last month that haven't come back, or whatever it is you want to do. Time block, and it is an amazing thing. I've been time blocking for dozens of years. It is incredible what you can get done, and also you stop worrying about things. Because I'm going to do that on Thursday at 1 o'clock. And, No, at Thursday at 1 o'clock or 9 o'clock or whatever you've time blocked, and it actually gets away from some of the stress of the habits. And then finally, stack your habits. Habits don't exist by themselves. They exist in things. So you want to get up an hour earlier to do whatever you want to do, whatever that extra hour is. And let's say it's instead of getting up at 7, you're getting up at 6, or instead of getting up at 6, you're getting up at 5. So the habit is, I'll get up at 6. Well, stack some habits on that, like number one, go to bed an hour earlier. That'd be a good habit to start. Go to bed an hour earlier. Another habit would be turn off all your technology earlier an hour, because everybody tells you you cannot go to sleep in deep REM sleep when you've had technology on until the last moment of sleep. get the TV off, get the email off, get the texting off, get the Facebook off earlier so you can go to bed early. That's a habit. That's stacking your habits. So I work at a job that I could technically be called at any hour of the night. Usually I'm not, but every once in a while. So I have a habit. So I know that if somebody calls me at 2 in the morning, I may have to go. Someone's died, someone's ill, someone, this is a job I do, right? So I have other habits stacked. I know where my clothes would be if I had to go. I don't have to go looking in a closet, what am I going to wear at 2 in the morning? I already know. I put my keys in the same place. Not because I'm anal and keys got to be in the same place, but because at 2 in the morning, I don't want to be hunting for my keys. At 7 in the morning, you can hunt for your keys. At 2 in the morning, you want to know where your key and your wallet is and whatever, your watch or whatever you take with you, right? So I stack my habits. And maybe in your business, you need to stack some habits. If you need to be calling your customers, what work do you need to be doing ahead to be prepared for those calls? If you need to be doing more this or more that, what are the other habits you need to stack with it? And when you do it, it becomes easier. Nothing in life is easy, but it becomes easier. 2-minute rule, time blocking, stack your habits. And then finally, the fourth, make it satisfying. Make it satisfying. What you reward, you will repeat. Let me repeat that. What you reward, you will repeat. You have to figure out what your rewards are. Now, so those of us who are overweight, I'll just tell you a secret. All you skinny people don't get it. And I hope you just gain weight. We who are bigger and exercise like to reward ourselves with food. Well, is that the most idiotic thing in the world? And my wife lets me know it. You got to reward yourself with what's right. Because you could have a bad habit that contradicts the good habit. And so be careful that if you're going to reward yourself with something, that it's also good and with consisting in your own life, right? Or you'll do things like me and, you know, do some of the stupidest things like that. Now, let's look at four thoughts and let's take work. When do you know you're doing the right thing at work? Kind of developing these habits, when do you know? So let's get it down just to work, just to yourself for a moment. When you know you're doing the right thing. Let me give you four thoughts. Number one, what feels like fun to you but work to others. I hope you work at a place or you are in a vocation or you do something that you really enjoy. And if I were to do what you did, it would be tough for me maybe. But you love it. And I've said this many times. If you don't love what you do, stop doing it and go do something you love. You're going to do 100,000 hours at whatever you do. Go do what you like doing. Maybe it might take a month or two to transition. I'm not telling you to quit your job or anything else. And I've shared this before, and I remember I said this once at Boca Lee 2 years ago, and an employee of mine quit. It was fantastic. She said, I just realized I do a great job at what I do, but I don't really love it. And this is what I really love doing. And I said, go for it. You know what? And we'll find somebody who loves doing what they do here. You know, and I would rather that. It's so important because then if you need to develop some habits, you're developing with things you like to do. If you hate your job and now you got to develop habits at it, you'll never do it. And you won't be successful. Go for it. Number two, what makes you lose track of time? I'm talking about work. If you really love what you do and you kind of lose track of time, I talked about this 2 or 3 years ago and spent a long time with this, but there needs to be a point in time where you're not always looking at the watch or the phone with a clock on it or whatever, however you tell time in your life. You've got to go, wow, you know, 2 hours just passed and I've had an incredible experience doing what I do. That's how you know you love it. You lose track of time. And when you create habits around that, like maybe some organizational habits and other things you might need around that, you will soar. You will soar. It's incredible. Number three, where do you get greater returns than the average person? You're better at what you do than the average person. Where is that? And I'd say soar and be a part of that. And if you're just mediocre at what you do and you've been doing it for 10 years, there is something in your life that you need to be doing, and it may not be what you're doing now. Or you may just have so many bad habits, you need to correct those habits and move forward. Number through four, last one. This is a good one. What comes naturally to you? Yesterday, I had to fly up to Atlanta just for a lunch. So I flew up early, got back, and so I'm in Atlanta. Great place to be after the Super Bowl, wrong place. But I get in, and I'm sitting there, and the pilot comes out. Pilots usually don't come out. Pilots tend to be introverts and love their little cockpit and whatever they do up there. You know, they lock you out when they want to go to the bathroom or get the Coca-Cola and all that. I watch all this stuff, and they just never interact. This guy comes out, grabs that phone, the microphone, and starts talking. He says, "This is the pilot." So you think he's in the room, right? Because everybody's down looking at all their, you know, things. He goes, "Look up. I'm right in front of you." And he says, "Thank you for flying American Airlines." Well, American Airlines has had some atrocious press lately. And so he's saying, "Thank you." He said, "You're paying my salary, and I want to thank you. And I'm going to give you a good ride to Miami, and I want to." And he went on, and this is what he said. He said, "If you have a complaint at the end of this, you come to me. And if you have a compliment, you go to the flight attendants." Now, is that a guy who's natural? And then he went in, and everybody almost, we couldn't give him a standing ovation because we had those things around us. But he got a clap like I have never seen because he was doing what came natural. American Airlines, if they told every pilot to do that, these pilots would, they couldn't do it. Why? Because they can't do that naturally. I know not every pilot is meant to get out there and do that in front of people. I get that. But he could. And he made those 150 people flying from Atlanta to Miami last night feel great and have a great experience when flying lately has not been a great experience because it came naturally. Do what you do that comes naturally and then do it for a great reason. So he obviously has some extroverted abilities and he did it for positive for the 150 people on that plane, but also for his company, which was an amazing thing, and he didn't get paid a dollar more for doing it. But he did what came naturally. Do what comes naturally. Now let's close, and I want to show you one last thing. I love balls. The kid in me is still here. I'm riding bikes. I love balls. And I bring soccer balls all the time. I did this about a year and a half ago, but so many of you are new. As Johnny said, we have a group of people here at our church that partner and do what Boca Lead does, but kind of on steroids around the world. We have 125 partners in 40 countries, and we spend 4 years with them, a week a year, with these 125 people all over the world, and we have a great time with them. And so I travel a lot, and I go on 3 or 4 of those trips, and our team goes on the rest. And what I usually do is I take balls with me because I love them. I deflate them, have them in my little satchel, and I'll be in a group somewhere, and there's an empty, with soccer, you don't even need a field. You just need some concrete or whatever. And I pump it up, and I throw the ball out. And you can't imagine how many people come together. Soccer is the common language, except for the United States, in the entire world. We don't get it. And by the way, for my friends who were in town, we had 30 of them in town, and they were watching the Super Bowl the other day. Bad choice of learning American football last Sunday, wasn't it? They go, "How boring was that?" Excuse me, Troy, your team won. But, so I throw the soccer ball out, and then I would run out and play with them, because I love soccer. Was a goalie. I played soccer, not American football, in high school, and I loved it. And so I'd get in and play. Well, one day I was in Africa in the bush, and I'm pumping up the ball, and I'm throwing it out, and I realized I shouldn't be in there playing anymore. What if I broke my whatever, and I'm in the bush, and I'm hundreds of miles from the nearest anyone who could help me? So I stayed back, and they were playing, and then afterwards we hung out and had a great time. And while they're playing, I looked and said, "What is my soccer ball?" You see, my soccer ball is not, and this is a metaphor now, everybody has a soccer ball. My soccer ball is not sports. As much as I love it, I'm aging out. And I started thinking, what is my soccer ball? What am I gifted at in this world, and why am I here, and what can I do, and what should I do? Become naturally, and how can I make it better? Because I have this belief that God has put us on this earth for a reason. And it's not just for me to get more from me and myself and my family. It is to reach out to other people. And I realized, and Boca Lead, in part, was birthed out of the soccer ball. Because I said, part of my gift is I love this city and I want to make it a better city. And I've grown up in this city and I can stand in front of people and talk. And we started Boca Lead 5 years ago. That's not your soccer ball. You got to figure out what is your soccer ball. And what is it that you do, and develop the habits around what you do in such a way that you can make a difference in this world. I believe Boca Raton is one of the best places in the world to work, to live, to raise your family, and to worship the Almighty than anywhere else in the entire world. And I am prejudiced for this great city of ours. And I want to make it a better city, and I'd love all of you to be a part of that. Thank you.
We trust you enjoyed Pastor Bill's teaching. Our goal is that you take this content and apply it in your business and also your personal life. Visit BocaLead.com for all of our past material and register for our next business lunch. Have a great time and discussion, and take the lead.